An English Examination, Level 2, C1. Section 1. Listening. I'm going to give you the instructions for this part of the test. You will hear this sound at the start of each piece. Remember to transfer your answers to the optical mark form before the end of the exam. Now open your question paper and look at Part 1, Section A. Listening, Part 1, Section A. You will hear Carol Sims, a music presenter, talking to Charles Morris, a music critic, about the Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela in Central America. For questions 1 to 5, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You will hear Section A twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section A.
In this program, we're looking at a phenomenon that's taken the world of classical music by storm, the Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela. In 2007, I was lucky enough to be in London's Albert Hall to see them perform. 200 youngsters wearing jackets in the yellow, red and blue of the Venezuelan flag, playing, dancing, shouting, throwing their instruments into the air, were led by the charismatic young conductor, Gustavo Dudamel. Most of the musicians and the audience were in tears. Such was the emotional intensity they generated. With us in the studio, we have Charles Morris, the music critic, to tell us more about these extraordinary young music makers.
Well, I was also in the Albert Hall that night, and as you say, Carol, an absolutely unforgettable evening. A bunch of amateur musicians and their wild young conductor, completely undaunted by the occasion. Wherever they perform, it's the same. New York, Berlin, Athens, Tokyo, every concert a sellout and rave reviews the next day.
And this is even more extraordinary when you consider their origins.
Yes, the founder was José Antonio Abreu, the eminent Venezuelan economist and musician. He certainly didn't set out to create a great symphony orchestra. He was much more interested in a program of social action in the slums around Caracas, Venezuela's capital. Life in these ghettos is driven by crime, violence, drugs, gangs, and hopeless poverty, and José Antonio wanted to help the kids find a better future. Being a musician himself, he thought that music might be the way out. So, 35 years ago, he started teaching music to a handful of kids in a rundown garage.
And I've heard that from this humble beginning, he's managed to transform the lives of thousands of underprivileged youngsters.
Well, yes. Currently, there are around 250,000 children and young people in Venezuela participating in different musical activities known simply as El Sistema, or The System. The Simon Bolivar Orchestra is just the top of this huge musical pyramid.
That's brilliant. But how is it all paid for? musical instruments are very expensive.
Well, José Antonio has a lot of influence with the people in power, and even though there have been many changes of government since the project started, he's managed to convince the politicians to fund the project. At the moment, El Sistema receives more than £15 million of government money per annum.
That's a lot of money for a relatively poor country to spend on musical education.
True, but governments of all persuasions have taken the view that the responsible, well-adjusted and productive citizens who emerge from El Sistema are worth the money.
So, what happens to the young people when they get too old for the youth orchestra?
There have been some remarkable success stories. 17-year-old Edickson Ruith, for example, is now playing the double bass with the Berlin Philharmonic. And the conductor, Gustavo Dudamel, who started with the Simon Bolivar Orchestra at the age of 13, has just been appointed chief conductor of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. These are the exceptions, of course. As for the others, many of them become music teachers and put something back into El Sistema by training the next generation of young players.
And how do you rate Simon Bolivar as an orchestra? Are they just famous because of their unusual background and colourful performances?
Not at all. They may be young, but they're all brilliant musicians. They've played in all the great international concert halls. They've got a record contract with Deutsche Grammophon, the most prestigious classical recording company in the world. And you have to be really first class to get a deal with them, I can tell you. They play great music, which demands the best from the players, and they rise to the challenge every time.
Now listen again.
In this program, we're looking at a phenomenon that's taken the world of classical music by storm, the Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela. In 2007, I was lucky enough to be in London's Albert Hall to see them perform. 200 youngsters wearing jackets in the yellow, red and blue of the Venezuelan flag, playing, dancing, shouting, throwing their instruments into the air, were led by the charismatic young conductor, Gustavo Dudamel. Most of the musicians and the audience were in tears. Such was the emotional intensity they generated. With us in the studio, we have Charles Morris, the music critic, to tell us more about these extraordinary young music makers.
Well, I was also in the Albert Hall that night, and as you say, Carol, an absolutely unforgettable evening. A bunch of amateur musicians and their wild young conductor, completely undaunted by the occasion. Wherever they perform, it's the same. New York, Berlin, Athens, Tokyo, every concert a sellout and rave reviews the next day.
And this is even more extraordinary when you consider their origins.
Yes, the founder was José Antonio Abreu, the eminent Venezuelan economist and musician. He certainly didn't set out to create a great symphony orchestra. He was much more interested in a program of social action in the slums around Caracas, Venezuela's capital. Life in these ghettos is driven by crime, violence, drugs, gangs, and hopeless poverty, and José Antonio wanted to help the kids find a better future. Being a musician himself, he thought that music might be the way out. So, 35 years ago, he started teaching music to a handful of kids in a rundown garage.
And I've heard that from this humble beginning, he's managed to transform the lives of thousands of underprivileged youngsters.
Well, yes. Currently, there are around 250,000 children and young people in Venezuela participating in different musical activities known simply as El Sistema, or The System. The Simon Bolivar Orchestra is just the top of this huge musical pyramid.
That's brilliant. But how is it all paid for? Musical instruments are very expensive.
Well, José Antonio has a lot of influence with the people in power, and even though there have been many changes of government since the project started, he's managed to convince the politicians to fund the project. At the moment, El Sistema receives more than £15 million of government money per annum.
That's a lot of money for a relatively poor country to spend on musical education.
True, but governments of all persuasions have taken the view that the responsible, well-adjusted and productive citizens who emerge from El Sistema are worth the money.
So, what happens to the young people when they get too old for the youth orchestra?
There have been some remarkable success stories. 17-year-old Edickson Ruith, for example, is now playing the double bass with the Berlin Philharmonic. And the conductor, Gustavo Dudamel, who started with the Simon Bolivar Orchestra at the age of 13, has just been appointed chief conductor of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. These are the exceptions, of course. As for the others, many of them become music teachers and put something back into El Sistema by training the next generation of young players.
And how do you rate Simon Bolivar as an orchestra? Are they just famous because of their unusual background and colourful performances?
Not at all. They may be young, but they're all brilliant musicians. They've played in all the great international concert halls. They've got a record contract with Deutsche Grammophon, the most prestigious classical recording company in the world. And you have to be really first class to get a deal with them, I can tell you. They play great music which demands the best from the players, and they rise to the challenge every time.
That is the end of Part 1, Section A of the listening test. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Listening Part 1, Section B. You will hear Carol Sims, a music presenter, talking to Gavin MacDonald of the Scottish Arts Council about plans to create a youth orchestra in Scotland. For questions 6 to 10, choose the best answer, A, B or C. You will hear Section B twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section B.
I've just been talking to Charles Morris about the amazing Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela and the music project El Sistema, which reaches out across the whole country. I'm joined now by Gavin MacDonald of the Scottish Arts Council, who's planning to set up a similar venture in Scotland. Gavin, on the face of it, it doesn't appear that Venezuela and Scotland have anything in common. So, what's the thinking behind your project?
I'm not saying that we have barefoot, starving street children roaming around our Scottish towns, but there are pockets of poverty and hardship in Scotland which may come as a surprise to many people. On the outskirts of Edinburgh, for example, one of the most beautiful and prosperous cities in Europe, there are run-down, vandalised estates with high unemployment, drug addiction and teenage alcoholism. The kids drop out of school. They've no prospect of ever getting a job, so they turn to crime and end up in prison.
So, you think classical music could be their salvation?
I'm not just a naive idealist. I've seen with my own eyes what's happened in Venezuela. I was invited there last year, and I spent a week with the Simon Bolivar Orchestra, and the difference it's made to the lives of those deprived youngsters is unbelievable. I heard so many moving stories.
Can you give us an example?
Well, yes. Juan Perez, a clarinet player, is typical of thousands of other underprivileged kids. At 12, he was on the streets, thrown out of home by his violent stepfather. He joined a gang, and by the age of 13, he was a drug dealer smoking crack cocaine. He ended up in a young offenders institute, where he was beaten and abused. Fortunately for him, people from the Youth Orchestra Project found him, gave him a clarinet, and turned his life round. Juan told me that without music, he would be dead by now. He's just won a scholarship to continue his studies in Germany. Amazing!
So, music has saved the street children of Venezuela. Do you really think it could do the same for Scotland?
Well, obviously the poverty we find in Scotland doesn't compare with the conditions that kids like Juan grew up in. But these Scottish youngsters are at the bottom of the pile. They deserve something better. And having seen the transformation that classical music has brought to a poor country like Venezuela, I'm determined to give it a go in Scotland. The Scottish Arts Council has agreed to provide some funding for the project, and I'm also trying to get support from local businesses and charitable bodies. I stress the fact that, apart from creating beautiful music and enhancing the cultural life of Scotland, being in an orchestra gives young people a sense of fulfilment. It also instills the values that are needed to be a productive member of society. Responsibility, teamwork, respect, the work ethic, all the things that are missing in the lives of some of our marginalised youngsters. I'm sure you'll agree it's a very persuasive argument.
It is, but it seems to me you've got your work cut out, Gavin.
Well, I'm very optimistic about what we're doing. I expect you've heard this musical experiment in Venezuela has generated a lot of interest round the world, especially in developing countries. So, who knows? Music just could be the answer to a lot of very difficult social problems.
Let's hope you're right. So, we've just time to wish you every success with your project.
Now listen again.
I've just been talking to Charles Morris about the amazing Simon Bolivar Youth Orchestra of Venezuela and the music project El Sistema, which reaches out across the whole country. I'm joined now by Gavin MacDonald of the Scottish Arts Council, who's planning to set up a similar venture in Scotland. Gavin, on the face of it, it doesn't appear that Venezuela and Scotland have anything in common. So, what's the thinking behind your project?
I'm not saying that we have barefoot, starving street children roaming around our Scottish towns, but there are pockets of poverty and hardship in Scotland which may come as a surprise to many people. On the outskirts of Edinburgh, for example, one of the most beautiful and prosperous cities in Europe, there are run-down, vandalised estates with high unemployment, drug addiction and teenage alcoholism. The kids drop out of school. They've no prospect of ever getting a job, so they turn to crime and end up in prison.
So, you think classical music could be their salvation?
I'm not just a naive idealist. I've seen with my own eyes what's happened in Venezuela. I was invited there last year, and I spent a week with the Simon Bolivar Orchestra, and the difference it's made to the lives of those deprived youngsters is unbelievable. I heard so many moving stories.
Can you give us an example?
Well, yes. Juan Perez, a clarinet player, is typical of thousands of other underprivileged kids. At 12, he was on the streets, thrown out of home by his violent stepfather. He joined a gang, and by the age of 13, he was a drug dealer smoking crack cocaine. He ended up in a young offenders institute, where he was beaten and abused. Fortunately for him, people from the Youth Orchestra Project found him, gave him a clarinet, and turned his life round. Juan told me that without music, he would be dead by now. He's just won a scholarship to continue his studies in Germany. Amazing!
So, Music has saved the street children of Venezuela. Do you really think it could do the same for Scotland?
Well, obviously the poverty we find in Scotland doesn't compare with the conditions that kids like Juan grew up in. But these Scottish youngsters are at the bottom of the pile. They deserve something better. And having seen the transformation that classical music has brought to a poor country like Venezuela, I'm determined to give it a go in Scotland. The Scottish Arts Council has agreed to provide some funding for the project, and I'm also trying to get support from local businesses and charitable bodies. I stress the fact that, apart from creating beautiful music and enhancing the cultural life of Scotland, being in an orchestra gives young people a sense of fulfilment. It also instills the values that are needed to be a productive member of society. Responsibility, teamwork, respect, the work ethic, all the things that are missing in the lives of some of our marginalised youngsters. I'm sure you'll agree it's a very persuasive argument.
It is, but it seems to me you've got your work cut out, Gavin.
Well, I'm very optimistic about what we're doing. I expect you've heard this musical experiment in Venezuela has generated a lot of interest round the world, especially in developing countries. So, who knows? Music just could be the answer to a lot of very difficult social problems.
Let's hope you're right. So, we've just time to wish you every success with your project.
That is the end of Part 1, Section B of the listening test. Please turn to Part 2. Listening, Part 2. Listen to three conversations, and for questions 11 to 20, choose the best answer, A, B, or C. You will hear each conversation twice. You have 2 minutes to read the questions for Part 2. Conversation 1.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Richard.
Joe? What on earth are you eating?
I'm trying tofu stew.
Ooh, I tried it last year, and it was disgusting.
What's wrong with it, Richard?
It's just a tasteless substitute for meat. It's foul.
No, it's not foul. It's made from bean curds.
It's horrible and slimy.
Rubbish.
If you don't want to eat meat, then don't. But there's no need to eat tofu. There's plenty of other alternatives. Pasta, cheese, vegetables.
Well, Tofu is a sort of vegetable, actually. It's been used in Asian cooking for over 2,000 years.
That stuff looks as if it's over 2,000 years old.
And tofu's got lots of protein, iron, and it's low in fat. It's good for vegetarians like me.
It's got no taste.
It has when it's cooked with spices and things. It's really good. Here, try some.
Frankly, I'd rather eat cardboard. And it'd probably taste better too.
Don't be so stupid. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Rather you than me. Anyway, I didn't know you were a vegetarian.
I've been one for 3 years.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
I don't have it written on my T-shirt. I'm not a vegetarian because it's trendy, you know. It actually really matters to me.
So why do you become one?
I saw a documentary about how animals are killed for meat, and I just thought, I couldn't do that. You know, kill a living animal. So I decided it was hypocritical to eat meat if I didn't like how it got onto my plate.
I suppose that's quite a good reason for not eating meat, but do you eat chicken?
No, of course not. Chickens are living things.
So you're not one of those vegetarians who thinks it's okay to eat chicken? What about fish?
Well, I have to admit that I do eat fish.
But isn't a fish an animal?
Yes, but it's cold-blooded and killing it doesn't seem quite so bad.
Talk about double standards.
Oh, shut up.
Now listen again.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Richard.
Joe? What on earth are you eating?
I'm trying tofu stew.
Ooh, I tried it last year, and it was disgusting.
What's wrong with it, Richard?
It's just a tasteless substitute for meat. It's foul.
No, it's not foul. It's made from bean curds.
It's horrible and slimy.
Rubbish.
If you don't want to eat meat, then don't. But there's no need to eat tofu. There's plenty of other alternatives. Pasta. Cheese? Vegetables?
Well, tofu is a sort of vegetable, actually. It's been used in Asian cooking for over 2,000 years.
That stuff looks as if it's over 2,000 years old.
And tofu's got lots of protein, iron, and it's low in fat. It's good for vegetarians like me.
It's got no taste.
It has when it's cooked with spices and things. It's really good. Here, try some.
Frankly, I'd rather eat cardboard. And it'd probably taste better too.
Don't be so stupid. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
Rather you than me. Anyway, I didn't know you were a vegetarian.
I've been one for 3 years.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
I don't have it written on my T-shirt. I'm not a vegetarian because it's trendy, you know. It actually really matters to me.
So why do you become one?
I saw a documentary about how animals are killed for meat, and I just thought, I couldn't do that. You know, kill a living animal. So I decided it was hypocritical to eat meat if I didn't like how it got onto my plate.
I suppose that's quite a good reason for not eating meat, but do you eat chicken?
No, of course not. Chickens are living things.
So you're not one of those vegetarians who thinks it's okay to eat chicken? What about fish?
Well, I have to admit that I do eat fish.
But isn't a fish an animal?
Yes, but it's cold-blooded and killing it doesn't seem quite so bad.
Talk about double standards.
Oh, shut up.
Conversation 2.
Hi, Andrea, how are you?
Fine, James. Good to see you.
Have you heard the news about poor old Sarah?
No. What's happened? She hasn't had an accident, has she?
Nothing like that. Did you know that she and her band went for an audition for one of those TV talent shows last week?
She did mention she was thinking about it, but I didn't know she'd actually done it. They should do very well. Sarah's got a fantastic voice. Vincent is a brilliant guitar player, and they write all their own material.
That's just the point. They didn't get through the audition. They got turned down. One of the judges told Marcus the drummer he had no sense of rhythm, and then he was really rude to Sarah and said she was tone deaf and criticised her clothes.
But she's a really good singer.
I know. She's so upset. The judges shouldn't be allowed to treat people like that.
Quite right. Fancy saying Sarah can't sing. Unbelievable.
Well, the people judging these shows don't know what they're talking about. We all know that Sarah's brilliant.
Well, I'm going to text her to see if she's all right. She and the band are playing at the Bologna Club on Friday. Why don't we go along? I bet she'd like to see some familiar faces in the audience.
I'm up for it.
I'll text everyone, and we'll all go along and show Sarah that we think she's great, no matter what that stupid judge said.
Good idea.
Now listen again.
Hi, Andrea. How are you?
Fine, James. Good to see you.
Have you heard the news about poor old Sarah?
No. What's happened? She hasn't had an accident, has she?
Nothing like that. Did you know that she and her band went for an audition for one of those TV talent shows last week?
She did mention she was thinking about it, but I didn't know she'd actually done it. They should do very well. Sarah's got a fantastic voice. Vincent is a brilliant guitar player, and they write all their own material.
That's just the point. They didn't get through the audition. They got turned down. One of the judges told Marcus the drummer he had no sense of rhythm, and then he was really rude to Sarah and said she was tone deaf and criticised her clothes.
But she's a really good singer.
I know. She's so upset. The judges shouldn't be allowed to treat people like that.
Quite right. Fancy saying Sarah can't sing. Unbelievable.
Well, the people judging these shows don't know what they're talking about. We all know that Sarah's brilliant.
Well, I'm going to text her to see if she's all right. She and the band are playing at the Bologna Club on Friday. Why don't we go along? I bet she'd like to see some familiar faces in the audience.
I'm up for it.
I'll text everyone, and we'll all go along and show Sarah that we think she's great, no matter what that stupid judge said.
Good idea.
Conversation 3.
Oh, Tom!
Katrina, what can I do for you?
Oh, I'm glad I caught you. I need to ask you a favour.
Sure. What is it?
Well, Malcolm and I are off on holiday on Friday for 4 weeks, and we need someone to water the plants while we're away.
OK, no problem.
I'll water them before we go, so you won't need to do them until next week, and I'll move them all into the living room near the window.
That's great. Where are you going?
New Zealand.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
I know. I'm so looking forward to it. You know, my brother moved out there about 10 years ago, and we've not seen him since, and it's his 60th birthday, so the whole family's going out. We've been planning this for months. We're hiring a car once we get there and going all over the country. In fact, Malcolm's actually persuaded me to go whitewater rafting, which is a bit different from our usual walking holidays.
Whitewater rafting?
Up in the mountains, at my age. I can't believe I've agreed to it, but I couldn't really refuse. The brochure was wonderful, and it'll certainly be an experience. I hear it's really very safe, and lots of older people do it.
Sounds brilliant. Oh, are you going to see that couple from across the road who moved out to New Zealand?
You mean Bernard and Ursula?
That's them. Blimey, they must have been gone, what, 3 years now?
Of course we're going to see them. In fact, they've offered to put us up for a few days when we're in Wellington, the capital. So we'll have lots of chance to catch up with them. Did you know they'd bought a house out there?
No, I didn't. I remember Bernard saying that they'd wait and see how they liked living on the other side of the world before they did anything like that. Well, I guess they're staying there.
Yes. Still, I suppose they'll want to know what's been happening on the street since they left.
Bernard always liked to hear the chit-chat.
Didn't he? I expect he'll want to know all about the people who moved into their old house.
Yeah. Anyway, you have a good time in New Zealand, and I'll see you when you get back. Don't worry about the plants. I'll keep an eye on the house too.
That's wonderful.
Now listen again.
Oh, Tom! Tom!
Katrina, what can I do for you?
Oh, I'm glad I caught you. I need to ask you a favour.
Sure. What is it?
Well, Malcolm and I are off on holiday on Friday for 4 weeks, and we need someone to water the plants while we're away.
OK, no problem.
I'll water them before we go, so you won't need to do them until next week, and I'll move them all into the living room near the window.
That's great. Where are you going?
New Zealand.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
I know. I'm so looking forward to it. You know, my brother moved out there about 10 years ago, and we've not seen him since, and it's his 60th birthday, so the whole family's going out. We've been planning this for months. We're hiring a car once we get there and going all over the country. In fact, Malcolm's actually persuaded me to go whitewater rafting, which is a bit different from our usual walking holidays.
Whitewater rafting?
Up in the mountains, at my age. I can't believe I've agreed to it, but I couldn't really refuse. The brochure was wonderful, and it'll certainly be an experience. I hear it's really very safe and lots of older people do it.
Sounds brilliant. Oh, are you going to see that couple from across the road who moved out to New Zealand?
You mean Bernard and Ursula?
That's them. Blimey, they must have been gone, what, 3 years now?
Of course we're going to see them. In fact, they've offered to put us up for a few days when we're in Wellington, the capital. So we'll have lots of chance to catch up with them. Did you know they'd bought a house out there?
No, I didn't. I remember Bernard saying that they'd wait and see how they liked living on the other side of the world before they did anything like that. Well, I guess they're staying there.
Yes. Still, I suppose they'll want to know what's been happening on the street since they left.
Bernard always liked to hear the chit-chat.
Didn't he? I expect he'll want to know all about the people who moved into their old house.
Yeah. Anyway, you have a good time in New Zealand, and I'll see you when you get back. Don't worry about the plants. I'll keep an eye on the house too.
That's wonderful.